pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country 2 minutes at a time for the biggest stories of the day where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now as we're on the road. One of my favorite days as we broadcast here live at the Alpha Point Golf Tournament. Fantastic event. It is benefiting the folks at Alpha Point, a great group that helps visually impaired, blind, people who have recently become blind, adults, children, with employment, every possible way that they can help out, supporting people of all ages, creating jobs, providing services. It's what they do. You can learn more at alphapoint.org. That's alphapoint.org, brought to you by our friends of course, CNC Group and Bank Midwest. It is the CNC Group Alpha Point Pro-Am presented by Bank Midwest. And, of course, it is a great time. We got a little bit of a delay right here, one of those pop-up showers that's coming through. We have ducked inside. We had a little bit of a heavy rain, and now that's let up, and we will see, although the radar looks like there might be more on the way. We'll find out how that goes. We'll find out how the two-minute drill goes right now. We had around the country 2 minutes at a time talking to the people covering the stories. Just brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks. You're looking for a great place to watch the NBA Finals? That's Twin Peaks. 29-degree man-sized draft beers, made-from-scratch menu, TVs everywhere, and, of course, the most scenic views in towns. Twin Peaks, your fight headquarters for all the MMA and boxing events as well. Twin Peaks eats, drinks, scenic views. Let's start things off in South Beach, Miami, Florida. We head to Zach Krantz, 560 Sports, WQAM, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Zach, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing very good. How are Heat fans doing after evening this series at 1-1? Where is the optimism level now that they can get it done?
Feeling a lot better after game one. Game one was a weird one because the Joker didn't have, his 40-point game like he did in game two. He was more a facilitator. And you know what? I think that's the key to Denver winning, is him being more a facilitator than him being more of a scorer. So I think Heat fans are feeling optimistic today. They're coming home. Two games here in South Beach to go, 1-1. You stole one in Denver. That's all you really needed to do.
You cover Eric Spoelstra. Ramona Shelburne was asking him the question last night after the game. You know, is that the key, is to turn him into a scorer, not let him be the facilitator? And he seemed to want to cut her off, almost like he didn't want that information getting out there. But it's pretty well known. They've lost, what, 9 in a row, the Nuggets, when he has 4 assists or less. They held him to 4 last night. That does seem like it's the magic elixir.
Yeah, it's the McDonald's worker not trying to give you the secret sauce to the Big Mac. You know, like, he didn't want to, although we all know what it was. So that's the difference. Right. I think he just kind of jumped on her a little bit. Probably didn't mean to come off so, arrogant, but it did come off a little bit like that. But that is the secret sauce. So you don't kind of want to tell them what they're going to do. But like you said, when you lose that many in a row and you end up winning the game and Joker still has 40-plus points, you obviously did your job.
17 of 35 from three. They get a couple of more, go to the free throw line for three. They knock down all 6 on fouled three-point attempts. You can almost throw that on there, make it 19 for 35 if you want, or 19 for 37, however you want to view it. Is that the key, or was it that they got to the free throw line after only going a record-setting 2 times the last time? Or is it the getting into the paint that opened up the threes and had them shooting the ball better?
I think getting into the paint obviously opens things up a little bit more, and getting to the free throw line more than 2 times helps any team out, especially the Heat, because Jimmy Butler, normally that's his game, but the rest of the team did play well. And shooting a three-pointer, listen, the Heat are live by the three, die by the three. They have been for a couple of years now, having Max Strus, Duncan Robinson, Caleb Martin, even Jimmy shooting some threes, and Gabe Vincent. When they're hitting their threes, they're hard to beat. I don't care who they're playing, even with a team that does have the Joker and is loaded, because that Denver team is loaded. But I do think that if they're hitting their threes, they're a really hard team to beat, the Miami Heat, even with Joker going, like we just saw, for 40-plus points.
Nuggets are a 2.5-point favorite in Game 3 in Miami. Who you got if you were going to put a bet down?
Yeah, I would take Miami just because they're rolling a little bit. And if they could just kind of stick to that secret sauce, Let Joker get what he's going to get. Don't let him be the point center. They could win that game. But, you know, it's a lot easier, me and you talking about it, than actually doing it, making the Joker go for that, the four assists or less. So if they can keep the secret sauce, they're going to win the game. If Joker comes out like he did in game one and shoot one shot in the first quarter, still have three or four assists and five rebounds, it's going to be a long night for Miami.
The Dolphins have been floated as a potential landing spot for Dalvin Cook. Do you think that's a move they make, or are they good enough at running back?
I think they're good enough at running back right now. But, yeah, Dalvin Cook's a big name. So if you have a chance, an opportunity to grab him, maybe they do take the shot. They did draft the kid. They didn't make a draft pick on a running back. They did bring back Mostert. They didn't bring back Wilson. Their running back room is kind of full right now. But when you have the opportunity to add a Dalvin Cook, and it's probably not going to cost you much at all, I think you try it. You know, if it was up to me and I was GM and sitting in Chris Greer's office, I would say, what can it hurt to have him? But the Dolphins, sometimes they're weird like that. When they have the opportunity right in front of their face, they kind of say, no, we're good. So we'll see how that ends up. But if they have the opportunity to get Dalvin Cook, I don't think they're going to stray on it.
Yeah. All right. Florida Panthers. Tell me, where do you come down how good that club is, how hockey is taking off? I mean, obviously they've had an incredible run, but how is hockey taking off in South Florida? Is it found a home there with the Lightning in Tampa and the Panthers in Miami?
Well, Central Florida for sure, where Tampa is and all that. They've been, you know, champions for a couple of years, or they were for a couple of years in a row. The Panthers have a loyal fan base. It's not huge, but they do have a loyal fan base. And listen, when you have a team like they do with, you know, three or four or five really good players on the team, big name players, yeah, you can get some momentum. But you got to win. You got to win for the fans. Listen, we can say whatever we want about the South Florida and the Miami and the Broward County fans down here. If you're not winning, no one's going to care about you. So if the Panthers do win, I do think that they will get a huge loyal fan base around them for the next couple of years. They got a hot goalie. They got Kachuk, who's playing out of his mind right now. And there's five or six other players that are all playing pretty well right now. But we're Miami. You know how we are. If you're not winning, we're not probably coming. So that sounds. That's probably the realistic truth.
Yeah. How about the baseball club? Last question. 32-28, but run differential is usually a better indicator of what future success will be. They're minus 37 on that. You like where the team's at? Is it still a year away? Or no? Is this a year that they can actually get themselves into the postseason?
I think they're still a year away, but it's unfortunate for them right now because they are playing well, that you have two other teams in their championship rounds of their respective sports, and no one's really paying attention to the Marlins right now. Not that, oh, you know, Marlins get a lot of attention paid to them to start off with, but they're playing good ball right now. They should get some more. I do think they're a year away, but listen, if the pitching gets hot and they can just hit the ball a little bit, they have a chance, because when their young pitchers are hot and they're pitching well, this team can be good. But if your bat's not working, then you ain't winning any games.
Zach Krantz in Miami, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great week.
Anytime for you guys. Get that rain out of there. We all have all the rain down here in South Florida during the summer. It's not for anyone else, you know?
Tulsa, Austin, Oklahoma City, Seattle.
Oh, wow. Quick on the draw there, Adam. Munch Bishop, NEO Sports Insiders, Cleveland, Ohio. Munch, how are you, my friend? I'm sorry. My bad. I got out of order here. We're going to go to Seattle. KJR, Dave Softy Mahler. Dave Softy, how are you, my friend?
Hey, how low is this show falling? You got two guys named Munch and Softy back-to-back booked for your radio program. My God, Seren. Unbelievable.
We consider it the pinnacle of our success when we can put you two on together. It's what we're all about.
Yeah. When the bar is low, it's not very hard, is it, pal?
No, it is not. What was the reaction with the word coming out that Russell Wilson nixed a deal to Philly that theoretically would have been an even better haul for the Seahawks than what they got from the Broncos?
Well, I mean, you would think that Jalen Hurts would have been a part of that, and their quarterback problems would be solved for now, for sure, with Jalen Hurts over Geno Smith. I mean, Geno Smith had a good year for the Seahawks, and he's a good player, but he's not a difference maker, you know, and I guess it depends on what you think about Jalen. I like Jalen a lot. I think Jalen Hurts has got a chance to be a top five, top six quarterback in the National Football League. Others disagree with me, but the draft pick compensation would have been different, you know, obviously, because you wouldn't have ended up with the number five pick in the NFL draft. But then again, if the Eagles had Russell Wilson and not Jalen Hurts, you know, what kind of year would they have had? So it's amazing how the dominoes would have fallen and how this alternate universe would have played out if Russell Wilson had accepted a trade to Philadelphia versus Denver. So I think it worked out pretty damn good, man, in the end for the Seahawks, sir, man. I really do.
Yeah. All right. Tell me what we were looking at it. I saw the stat when Monty Williams got paid that he's the fifth highest paid coach. All of them more than Andy Reid. Second on that list.
Yeah.
Is it? I got this right. $18 million per for Pete Carroll. How many more years is Pete Carroll going to do it? As long as the check is that big?
Yeah, I don't think anybody really knows how much Pete Carroll's making, by the way. That's like one of the biggest secrets in sports, is what kind of salary Pete Carroll's got. So I would assume he's up there with the highest paid coaches in sports. You know, he basically runs the show, for crying out loud. It's his baby in Seattle. But how many more years is he going to do this for? Look, I mean, he's acting like a guy who's nowhere near retirement, right? With all the moves they just made, they stripped this thing down to the studs, and they still were able to win 9 games a year ago and make the playoffs and play the Niners. They got their ass kicked in the wild card game, but they still made it, for God's sake. So I just don't think that Pete Carroll is looking like or reminding me of a guy, Soren, who is anywhere near ready to call it quits. He's got this youthful exuberance at the age of 71 years old, and I don't know. I mean, he's accomplished everything you can accomplish in football, you know? Why would he stay? He's won a college football national championship. He's won a Super Bowl. He's probably going to be a Hall of Famer in both sports, for God's sake. So I don't know what more the guy can do besides go back-to-back and make up for what happened in Glendale in 2014. But, yeah, he doesn't strike me as a guy at all who's ready to call it quits whatsoever.
Where do we sit on the Mariners? One of their top prospects, Brian Wu, gave up 6 earned in 2 innings in his debut. Guys will struggle early on in their careers.
Right.
Part of it. Is this team that's sitting at 29-30 waiting to kick it into another gear, or is this just going to be a bit of a step back before hopefully taking 2 steps forward next year?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of feels like a step back when it comes to the AL because, let's face it, man, the Rays and the Rangers are screwing everything up. Nobody thought the Rays and Rangers would be leading their divisions right now. Nobody thought the Yankees and the Astros would be fighting for a wild card spot. And that's what they're doing right now. You know, Baltimore had a great year last year. They're not going away. They're on pace to win 101. The Yankees and Astros are both on pace to win 96. So right now, as the Mariners sit to make the playoffs, they would have to play 31 games over the rest of the way to be a playoff team. So the Yankees and Astros and the way Baltimore's playing, all three of those teams being in the wild card race as opposed to winning their division, that's really kind of screwing over teams like the M's. But they just simply put got smoked in the last 6 games. They played 2 teams in Texas and New York that generally are regarded as, you know, 2 of the better teams in the American League. And the Mariners got whipped by them in those games. They got outscored, 50-16 in the last 6 games, including 30-9 in a 3-game sweep against the Texas Rangers. So every now and then, a little bit of a measuring stick, a little barometer comes along, and the M's completely whiffed on this one the last week or so, man.
Ron Francis gets extended by the Seattle Kraken. Does the entire city have Kraken fever after their run in the playoffs this year?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I was actually in Maui about a week and a half ago, and everybody was talking Kraken, right? No Mariners, no Seahawks, no Huskies. Everyone wanted to know what was next for the Kraken. There's a buzz for them for sure. The ratings were way up at the end of the year when the playoffs began. The games themselves, Soren, you got to get out here, by the way, and check out the arena. You're going to love it. It's freaking awesome. The games themselves are like social events. It kind of reminds me of the Sonics back in the 90s where people really didn't even care who was playing or why they were there, didn't even really know much about basketball or know much about hockey. They just want to be there, and they want to be a part of it because there's a freaking party happening at that arena. So, you know, can they do it again next year, right? Can they make the moves they have to make over the offseason? You're watching those series against teams like Colorado, by the way, and the Dallas Stars. And you look at players like Pavelski, obviously, and Cale Makar, and, you know, the Kraken just don't have one of those guys yet. So it's all nice and fun to win as a team, but when the you-know-what hits the fan, you got to have a difference maker. And the Kraken had a lot of really good players, but no real elite players on this team last year. So that's Ron Francis's job over the offseason for sure.
It certainly seems like it's a foregone conclusion that whenever the NBA expands, Seattle is one of the teams. It's who's the other one with them. Since you're around that all the time, since you guys are the focal point of the expansion, got any idea on when that's going to be now?
Yeah. Well, I'd be shocked if it wasn't Vegas as the other team. I think everything we're hearing from the NBA is that they want to bring in both teams at the same time. They want to do the exact opposite of what the NHL did and go 31-32 together and not 31-32 4 years later. like the Knights and the Kraken. So I know that Tim Leiwicki and the Oakview Group people are looking to break ground soon on a new arena in Vegas that they would call their own for the NBA. The Knights would play in one arena, and the NBA team would play in the other. And as soon as that thing gets broken in Vegas, as soon as they break ground on that in Vegas, I think the clock is ticking. I mean, Adam Silver came out on the NBA and TNT with those guys, with the NBA Network, whatever it was, with Charles and Chuck and Shaq and company, and said that they're now considering expansion. And that is a tone-changing statement by Adam Silver. Adam Silver has never gone that far about expansion. The fact that he's even admitting that they're considering expansion is a huge step from where they were just a few months ago, man. So I think it's probably within 3 years, if not maybe two, that you'll hear an announcement, but I'd be pretty stunned if it wasn't Seattle and Vegas at the same time.
All right. Yeah, it's great stuff. Softy Mahler, you're the man, the best in the business, handles the afternoons there in Seattle. Great stuff, my friend. Have yourself a great weekend.
Second best to you, pal. See ya.
Munch Bishop, NEO Sports Insiders in Cleveland, Ohio is next. Munch, how are you, my friend?
Sorin, I am superb. Always a treat to speak with you. You're doing good?
Doing great, my friend. Doing great. We're at a fantastic golf tournament. I know all the great work you do for charities there in Cleveland, Ohio. We're at a great golf tournament here at beautiful Loch Lloyd Country Club for the Alpha Point Group. So we are having a great time here. A little bit of rain right now, but it can't dampen the spirits for a great event, for a great cause. So, yes, we are doing very good. Thank you for asking. Are the Browns fans doing well? Are we going to see a reunion of DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson there in Cleveland?
I don't believe that we will see that. And you got to remember this, too. The Browns fans, thank golly, that they did not follow Jim Jones to Guyana, okay? Because, and thank golly, that they don't serve Kool-Aid at Cleveland Browns Stadium. No longer First Energy Stadium. It's funny, a parting of thieves, you know what I mean, with Haslam getting rid of First Energy Stadium. I can't think of what politician they have not bribed in the past year. But the bottom line is, you have to remember, the 1-15 season, the 0-16 season, oh, last year they were headed to the Super Bowl. Well, that's the record they had is not going to do that for you, okay? Is that every year you hear the same thing, you expect the same thing. You know, would I like to see them do well? Certainly would. However, they're going to have to prove it to me. You know, no more talk. Get out there and get it done. But no, I do not see the reunion happening, especially with the guys that they have signed.
What's the word on how Deshaun Watson's doing in OTAs?
Do you know what? Again, I find him to be a despicable human being. I have to put that on there. Is that for some reason, most of the media seem to ignore that fact and put him on a red carpet, but I hear he has been putting balls right in the money. However, when I hear about throws and I see throws on down the line, the first thing I ask is, A, who's the defensive back guarding the guy? And B, is there a defensive back guarding the guy? Hell, you know what? You could throw to me, sir, in probably a crossing route, you know, with nobody guarding me and look sharp.
So what is the expectation for the Browns this year? Is it a year that they can contend?
The expectations for the organization is going to the Super Bowl. The expectations for the fans is going to the Super Bowl. Why don't they start with winning the first game, they'll win the second game? I know you're saying, Munch, you've gotten boring on me as the years go by, but for as dismal and despicable as this team has been, all talk, nothing to back it up, shouldn't they just plan on winning games and go from there? But yeah, the organization, Jimmy Haslam, has basically said that we need to go to the Super Bowl this year. That is our expectations.
Will the seat be hot on Kevin Stefanski as the season starts? Is there a number that's expected for him to achieve?
You know what? Expected for him to go to the postseason, and I think it's a damn shame because for some reason, and I call him the Rasputin. If you know your history back to Russia before the Soviet Union, I call him the Rasputin of the organization. For some reason, Paul DiBattista, who was part of what you're seeing in Oakland today, helped lay the foundation for that aberration of a baseball team, is that his computer seems to be more important than football intellect, which I think that Stefanski is not very far from being removed if they don't win and win in a hurry. But yeah, it's also very unfair, the expectations placed on him with what he has to work with and deal with.
The Guardians are 5 games under .500. Usually that wouldn't be reason to add to a team as the trade deadline looms a couple of months from now. But they're only 3.5 games out of first place, tied with the lowly Tigers, for crying out loud, in second place behind the Twins. They're only a couple of games over .500. What's the mindset for the Guardians? Are they a team that needs to get winning right now so that they will add and go for it? Yes. Or are they packing it in and playing for the future?
No, no packing it in any way, shape, or form. In fact, you want to talk about the future. What happened the last time around in the drafts? Well, you know, if they're drafting 19, 20 players, usually 17 or 18 of these guys are pitchers. They've had two young kids come up and look brilliant. Bybee and Logan Allen, the lefty. Tristan McKenzie came back yesterday. I understand it's just one appearance back. But as Salvador Perez would say, and how could you not treasure what Salvador Perez said? Boy, that's one bad, and I won't recite the words of the theme from Shafts on there, okay, about Tristan McKenzie. But they've got that going on. You know, here's the bottom line, too, is anything they could do isn't good enough. They come off a 7-game road trip. They go 2-1 against the Orioles, and they go 2-2 with the Twins. And you got to remember, too, you just said it, they are in the Central. Talking to scouts around baseball and personnel people, they said, you know what, if they're 5 back at the 4th of July, I wouldn't worry about it either because you're in the Central. The Tigers will drop away. They'll fade off. I don't know what's going on with the White Sox. When I was in Chicago for the 3-game series, there's a lot of talent there. I don't know if there's any cohesiveness, but again, that was played on La Russa in the past. But yes, indeed, they will make a deal if they need to get some power. I mean, the outfield combined has 3 home runs. They're great defensive outfield for the most part, at least left and center, but that's not cooking there. And I do know for a fact that if you want Shane Bieber, we'll offer up a bat or two to start with, and they would part with Shane Bieber.
Yeah, interesting. Is Ryan Day feeling any pressure? I mean, he's been very good at Ohio State, but I hear some people, you know, kind of saying, well, I don't know, lost 2 times in a row to Jim Harbaugh. Where does his stature sit with Ohio State right now?
My friend, who set you up on this question? Because I got put on the spot for a station on the East Coast the other day about this. Now, you're asking me, the great Wayne Woodrow Hayes, who no doubt about is one of the top 5 college football coaches of all time. He wasn't fired for punching Charlie Bauman from Clemson in the Gator Bowl. That was an excuse to fire him because he lost to the U of M 3 times in a row. John Cooper escaped that because Gordon Gee is a benevolent fellow, the man with the longer with the bow tie, and he wouldn't let him jettison him. My thought is this. I like Ryan Day. I like what he's doing. I like what he's recruiting. They're not giving Kyle McCord, who has a stamp of approval from the best receiver in the nation, Marvin Harrison, giving him his due. But the bottom line is, if Ryan Day would lose to the U of M again, yeah, then he must be terminated. And you're asking me who I am, the preeminent, and I'm proud of it, Homer Honkin Show for my alma mater, the Ohio State Buckeyes.
I love it. Munch, you're the absolute best, my man. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it, and have yourself a great week.
Well, you too, and thank you for paying forward. That's what a Woody Hayes has launched, too, by being out at that golf outing today.
You're the man.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Who hit the most career home runs at Old Busch Stadium?
Most career home runs.
1966 to about 06.
Busch Stadium.
Most career home runs.
Which was from what year to what year?
From 66 to 06.
You got me? Yo.
The answer is not Mark McGwire. It is not Jim Edmonds. It is actually Ray Lankford, who celebrates a birthday today. Ray Lankford hit 123 home runs. McGwire, when you consider that he only played for the Cardinals from the middle of the 1997 season until about 2000 or 2001, it's kind of amazing that he hit almost as many home runs at Busch Stadium as an all-time Cardinal. Ray Lankford, Jim Edmonds had 111 home runs. Those are the only three that have at least 100 home runs at Busch Stadium.
Okay. By the way, I apologize. We get, I don't know what it's doing there at the station, but it's pouring here. We made the call a little bit ago to move inside here at beautiful Loch Lloyd Country Club. And we made the right call. They made the right call to bring the golfers in. It's just a downpour here. I don't know what you guys have there. You know, it's coming down. It's, I don't know if it's playing tricks with our line or whatnot. So I apologize, Kay. I was not going to guess Ray Langford, though. Not under any circumstance. Okay. So, we have that going for us, you know, which is nice. Are we down? I don't know what to, if I'm up or down or... I hear them back there. Yeah.
I guess we're back.
Does anybody have me?
Yeah, we're up and running. We just had a button pushed that that wasn't pushed right. That you know, odd things happen in sports radio.
It was everybody, just for the record, everybody was on the air at that time, so we're good. And it wasn't our best moment, but they heard us talking.
Yeah, thank you to Joe Spiker, our good friend from Easton Roofing, who said, we can hear you.
Yeah,
I don't think they can. Yeah.
So it was a very simple, there's a spot on the board that the point, there's program one and program two.
I don't care.
Curtis,
neither does anybody driving around.
In,
trust me. Stop. Abort this.
No,
abort this explanation right
to.
Now.
It was in program no. two, and all I needed
nobody
to do
cares.
Was hit program one.
Nobody cares. I don't even care. And I do this show.
Well,
for
I'm
God's
sorry
sake.
For a moment. The attention care. Was diverted from you, but I just felt we should talk about it.
Had to get it off his chest. That's fantastic.
Now it shows he's disconnected.
Everybody on the 2-minute drill. Yeah.
You disconnected for a hot second.
Yeah. Well, we've got something. Dylan's up and moving on different equipment. So I don't know if we've got something's going on with our line. Have been gold.
I know.
For quite some time. And now all of a sudden, I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know.
You managed to go to five different cities or four different cities all
yes,
over the country.
Yes, but we're on our same line.
I guess we're just going to have some technical problems. Maybe we'll solve those. And in the interim, do we want to hear some sound from... this is true. We're going to hear the Chiefs, and this is anyone who's kind of followed the Chiefs in the way they have... been with the media over the years, it will not surprise you that their presentation, their ceremony with President Biden today at the White House did not go off when it was normally scheduled to go off. They said 3:30, and then about 3:40, they said 5 minutes, and at 3:45, it had not happened still. And finally, at about 5 minutes till four, everything was up and running. You heard the hail to the chief. President Biden spoke for a few moments. He talked about his wife being from Philadelphia and being an Eagles fan. But if the Kelce brothers can get things worked out, then I guess anyone can get things worked out. He had a moment of silence for the late Norma Hunt, who passed away yesterday. That was nice. And then he turned it over to Mark Donovan, who spoke for a while and thanked some people. And then Andy Reid took the stage, and Andy Reid said some nice things, talked about this team and what an amazing thing they had done. And he didn't give a moment of silence, not intentionally, for Norma Hunt, but you could tell as he began thanking people. One of the people he thanked was the Hunt family. So we're up and running for sound. Okay, so let's hear a couple of these things. Let's hear cut number three. This is Joe Biden taking a moment to honor the late Norma Hunt.
And we also know that we're missing one of the most loyal Chiefs fans that there ever was, Norma Hunt, who passed away this weekend. I'd like to suggest a moment of silence. You know, Norma was known as the First Lady of Football. She attended every single Super Bowl in history, all 57, including the past one where her Chiefs won. And Jill and I send our condolences to the entire Hunt family, including their son and current CEO chief of the Chiefs, Clark Hunt.
Yeah, Joe Biden giving a moment of silence for the late Norma Hunt. And that was, yeah. I think, everyone who's spoken about that woman has said what just what an amazing woman she was, and just an absolute wonderful ambassador for the game of football, and particularly for the Chiefs.
Yeah, and very nice that, you know, the president would take the time. You know, it's an obvious move. I mean, I'm not saying like he split an atom there or anything, but the first lady of football, the matriarch of the Kansas City Chiefs, all those things are words that have been used to describe her. And you know, certainly, you know, she and Lamar, just the commitment to sports all over this country, certainly in Kansas City with the Chiefs and originally with the Wizards, but in soccer and tennis and everything else. And, you know, you couldn't have been married to Lamar Hunt and not been a sports fan and not right. wanted to be around it, because you were going to see some games if you were married to him. So, yeah, that's fantastic. What else? We got anything else we want to hear from there?
A couple of fun more things. Andy Reid got up there and began to talk about some things, and there was a little bit of a technical problem, which you'll hear here. Even at the White House.
I don't know what you speak of.
Even at the White House, there was a technical problem, so even at the highest level it happened. But I thought Andy Reid kind of handled it pretty well. Here's Andy Reid's opening comments.
I'll tell you what, we're fired up to be here as a football team. President Biden, your staff, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for inviting us to the White House. I mean, everybody good? We're really fired up. We are really fired. Inviting us to the White House for this celebration of a championship.
Now, it sounded like gunfire, but it wasn't. It was just an electrical crackle and pop at the mic, and I'm not quite sure what happened, but he stopped. He's like, everybody good?
Wow.
Did that not sound like gunfire?
Yeah, it did. It's like, holy cow. What? Like, I didn't. Did Andy Reid duck or anything?
Eagle fans are serious. But it was pretty fun all together. And we'll play one more here. This is at the end. This is one that's, if you didn't see it, you'll have to go back and see it and watch it. It was a perfectly executed ruse by the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, because after Andy Reid spoke, this is how they went to it.
With that, Travis Kelce and Pat Mahomes are going to take over the stage.
So I've been waiting for this moment.
I'm sorry.
So they both handed the mic. Travis starts to talk. Kelce starts to talk, and Mahomes is grabbing. No, sorry. Let's get him away from the microphone. Sorry. He walks him back to the group of players. I was like, that was so fantastically, because you could hear the crowd when he goes, I'll turn it over to Travis Kelce, and Patrick Mahomes is going to take over the stage. And everyone goes, whoa, what is going to happen? And Kelce, in a bright red suit with the black shirt, seemed like he was ready for some fun. And Patrick Mahomes is like, no, I'm sorry. We can't do this. So.
Yeah, that is
pretty well done.
He should have just said, now we'll turn it over to Travis Kelce and not mention Mahomes. Then Mahomes goes, no,
yeah,
we're not doing this.
That would have been pretty good, too.
Not a good idea. Not a wise idea here. Let's go. Get away. That's fantastic. Pretty cool moment. The Royals and Chiefs have now been there in the last, we can still say, in the last 10 years.
Yep.
We're getting pretty close to the 10-year anniversary of the 2015 championship. But, you know, the Chiefs not getting to go because of the COVID year, and not a tradition, as Sam McDowell was telling us, until 1980. I mean, yeah. I didn't realize that until he said it. I guess I just never thought about it. But he's right. The tradition used to be to call the coach or to call the quarterback. I think, you know, Ronald Reagan even called.
He's called a few.
And even he called Nixon called Len Dawson.
Yeah.
And then, but didn't Ronald Reagan.
He called the Royals.
Did he call George Brett?
Yep. He called the Royals, and he spoke. The funniest part about that is they kept passing the headset. Like, nobody wanted to talk to the president. They all wanted to go celebrate their title. And Brett gets on and goes, Mr. Reagan, yeah, I met you at a touchdown club event. You know, remember that? He's just so cool, you know, because George Brett was cool in every moment he could. And I remember at the end, because Ewing Kaufman talked to him, Brett Saberhagen talked to him, George Brett talked to him. At the end, they passed it over to Avron Fogelman right as they were going to commercial. So Avron Fogelman's chat with the President of the United States went unheard by anybody.
As it frankly should.
Summarizing his history with the Royals.
I think the goal should always be you want to go twice to see the same president, right? Because that means you've won a couple titles pretty close together. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, the Steelers in 1980, coming off the 79 title, Jimmy Carter invited him to the White House with the, I think the Pirates may have followed them because they had also won the World Series, and that was the first time that the Super Bowl champions visited the White House.
Wow, very cool. The Kansas City Chiefs at the White House. We will take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk some Royals baseball. We are live on the road at one of our favorite spots. We're here at Loch Lloyd Country Club for the CNC Group Alpha Point Pro-Am presented by Bank Midwest. It benefits Alpha Point. You can find them online at alphapoint.org, offering rehab and education services, helping folks with visual impairment live independently, offering employment opportunities, different camps and classes for kids. Just a great organization helping those with visual impairments. You can find out more information by going to alphapoint.org. That's alphapoint.org. We'll take a break. Talk some Royals baseball next here in the program. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. We're going to talk to David Leske, Inside the Crown, his great blog that's coming up in our next hour. We'll talk some Royals baseball with you right now as we broadcast live at the CNC Group Alpha Point Pro-Am presented by Bank Midwest. Great event benefiting Alpha Point. You can find out more information about Alpha Point at alphapoint.org. Great Kansas City charity helping those with visual impairments in a whole host and variety of ways. Check them out online at alphapoint.org. Had a downpour for a little while. Now it looks like it's backed off. I haven't looked at the radar because I don't think we're going to be moving back outside. But hopefully we'll get everybody out. A couple holes to finish here, but always a great event. And the rain cannot dampen the spirits of all the folks that are here giving back to the community. A great cause here at the tournament. Let's talk a little bit about the Kansas City Royals. They dropped 2 of 3 to the Rockies. I could care less what the record is at this point. They're probably going to have the second worst record. Although I will say this, did anybody else have the Royals over? Because I did.
Over?
I had the Royals over. Win total.
Oh.
Nobody's thinking about that now because it seems so preposterous. But do you know what they have to do to get there?
Oh, my God.
Have a better finish than the Rays?
I'm guessing 600 plus.
Well, I'm not considering it a lost bet. They have to get over 68.5 for me to win. That was the line I got on FanDuel. At 18-41, it's not done until they got to play better than 500 baseball. So right now, as we speak, the fact that they only need to go 51-52 over the last 103 games, I think that's right. That would make them 69-93, right? That'd be 162, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The fact that they are still able to get there without playing 500 baseball, to me, says that that bet is very much alive. Don't you agree?
No.
Yeah, no.
I'd love to back you here, brother, but...
No. But I'm not giving up until it falls below that number. So just FYI, for what it's worth. Anything jump at you about this weekend with the Kansas City Royals? I'm going to point out a couple of things. Let me know if anything jumps at you, and we'll talk about this with David Leske. First thing I want to bring up is something I forgot to bring up when we were chatting this morning about different topics for the day. But can we acknowledge the Jordan Lyles signing has not been good? That's not what we need to acknowledge. Everybody already talks about that. But can we acknowledge when the guy throws a good game? 5 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 8 Ks. Do you remember when we discussed this last week? He gives up 1 run in the first, and then they don't let him see anybody. You know how many batters he faced? 18. That means no one was seen a third time. This has been when it's all fallen apart. I went over this. I can't remember. Did we talk about it or did Randy and I talk about it on our Kaufman Corner podcast?
Knocked around a little bit.
The first inning, he has not been good. And the sixth inning, he has not been good. All right? So quit trying to get him to pitch the sixth inning. And how about putting an opener in front of him?
Yes.
Now, they didn't do it. He gave up one in the first inning, but then the Royals led 2-1 when he left the mound after five innings. Listen, I don't think Jordan Lyles is the answer. I don't think he's part of the future beyond next year. But I think Jordan Lyles can facilitate the game in a semi-effective measure. But you have to quit trying to act like you're going to turn Jordan Lyles into an anchor in your rotation and just use him for what he is. You want him to eat innings? Then give him. Then you don't really care what innings they are, right?
No.
So give him the opportunity to give you five innings on a regular basis. If he could go out and give you 30 starts and five innings per and gave you 150 innings, would you be happy? I say yes.
Absolutely.
You would be happy. So why not the opener in front of Lyles, number one? But more importantly, never, ever, ever let him see a 19th batter.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
I'm down with that. One thing jumped out to me over the weekend, and it was Brady Singer's start yesterday. I thought one out from a quality start, and I thought Matt Quatraro correctly read the tea leaves. He's given up two hits to the Rockies' best player. He's coming up a third time. I'm going to get him out of there while he's still in the lead, and he can walk off the diamond to some applause and feeling good about himself. Not that they're necessarily in the business of making guys feel good, but this is a guy you want to you know, be in a good frame of mind, and that was a move I think a lot of fans could look at and say it was done to get that win that day and therefore isn't a move for the future. But I disagree with that take. If anybody has it, I think that was a move for Brady Singer's future, and it just happened to coincide with the fact that it helped him win a game. I like that he did that.
It goes right along with what I'm talking about with Jordan Lyles. First of all, he had 95 pitches. Okay, Lyles, on the other hand, which is one of the reasons why I think he's coming around on Lyles and understanding, okay, let's pitch him to what he can do, 74 pitches. I mean, he clearly had more pitches, but they're like, no, it's not about how many pitches you got. It's about how many times they've seen you. Well, 95 pitches for Brady Singer through 5 2/3, and just get the win stat, get the quality start, all that stuff is irrelevant. Right, and trying to win games, and he went 22 batters, so he had seen his way through. In fact, who was coming up? Was
Jones.
It Jones coming up who had two hits off him already?
Yep.
Yeah, and the bullpen within, he was 2-for-2 against Singer, and he was coming up for the third time. He'd already made his way through Doyle, Profar, McMahon, and Moustakas a third time. And he said, that's it, 95 pitches, you're done, you're out, I'm going to go to the bullpen. And this is how it's supposed to work, and the bullpen delivers the goods. They didn't deliver the goods on Friday. I can make you a case that, you know, the series very easily could have been 2 out of 3 for the Royals.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I do think that there was some progress made with the pitching. Clark, Chapman, and Barlow finished that thing off, and I'm with you completely when it comes to Brady Singer. Get him out feeling good. You know, his ERA is still 6-something. So let's not act like, you know, he's right as rain. Like, until you get those numbers down, I believe guys that aren't hitting don't need to go out there and hit against the toughest guy that they're going to see all year. And pitchers you're trying to nurse their confidence back up, yeah, let's go out there and have him blow up what has been 5 2/3 shutout innings by trying to stretch him against a guy who's already tagged him twice. No, pass. You know, Matt Quatraro is at least giving everybody a chance, maybe a third of the season, to be what they want to be, and now hopefully he's turning the corner. He's going to treat Jordan Lyles like what he is, which is a five-inning guy, which is an 18-batter pitcher. He's going to rebuild the confidence of Brady Singer. They're going to get him up and running and hopefully have a much better second half en route to winning 51 games and scoring the over. That's what it's about, people.
All right, what player caught a pass from Ronald Reagan during his team's visit to the White House? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen.